Howdy, howdy, folks, and welcome to Moose Podcast number 405. What is it about composition? How are you folks doing? Trust you had a marvelous 4th of July. I saw some really cool shots, really great imaginative ways of telling our country's story with the celebration of the 4th of July. My tip of the hat to all you who shared your photographs, that's one of the big things about photography that I think we need to do more of. It can brighten everybody's world, including your own. Well, here we are, made the corner, gone past solstice, gone past half the year. Heat waves are starting to hit. It's summer. Hope that you are out there shooting, just watching those daylight hours, not only for your exposure and your storytelling, but also your skin. Keep in mind that sun, it does a number on our little wimpy skin. No matter how protective that cover is, it can be bitten. So be careful. Hydrate, dunk on that sunblock, and get out there and make those shots and share them. I want to thank my good friends at Bedford Camera, bedfords.com, for sponsoring the Moose Podcast. Right now, Bedford Picks, you might not have heard that. I don't talk about it very often. Bedford Picks, bedfordpix.com. They have 50% off all their printing. And these guys take printing really serious. They do an incredible job. I know firsthand, they had many a conversation with Steve and their techs, and I'm telling you, these guys do a great job. And you might not know they do amazing printing. Right now, 50% off everything they print. Really cool. And of course, you know, they've got this week a number of the what they're calling Nikon calls touch and try. Going on at the stores with the Z6 III. No, still don't have mine. Long story, but you can go out and touch this amazing new camera. The 240p, I hear, is really phenomenal. It's got me really chomping on the bits. So you can do that. And of course, Bedford's has all the other great gear and service and inventory, and they also have the Moose discount if you check out. So give Bedford's a call, a click, a drop-in smile, and remember to mention the old Moose-a-roo to get that discount at the end of your purchase. So bedfords.com. Thank you, guys. So what is it about composition? Now, I say that you got to keep in mind that I definitely come to this whole composition proposition a whole lot from a different point of view than most. And to understand that, I was very fortunate to grow up in a home where the elements were arranged, everything from the furniture to artwork on the walls and shelves and the lighting, everything was already in an order that was so visually pleasing that it put anybody who came into the house at total ease. And I grew up kind of at the knee of my older sister, who was a phenomenal artist with any medium except photography, which was I thought was always ironic because everybody else in the family were photographers. But anyway, so it was. We never talked about any of those things that you hear people talk about. And I was just, that's how I was molded, especially in the wood shop where we would create things that were not only super functional, but were very pleasing to the eye, using lines and shapes to move you around through the character of the wood. So the wood itself, we would select it based on that character, and then would build it to emphasize that character. And I have no doubt that all of that greatly influenced and still influences the way that I approach everything and anything photographically. Now, I understand this doesn't help you per se, but bear with me. I'm going to try to help you through it. Now, the first thing you might be saying is, we're going to talk about composition, not look at a bunch of examples, and that's correct. That's how, once I started getting into photography, we talked about it as much as we looked at examples. One of my first really strong classes on composition was in high school. It was photographic. And the cameras were actually taken out of our hands. And the assignment was really simple. And I wish I could find the bloody book that was our textbook for that. I know it's here somewhere in this house, but I can't find it. But keep in mind, we're talking about a book that, you know, I was, this would be 1973. It was a textbook, and the title was not composition. It had the word elements in it, but I don't remember what else. And that's why I always talk about arranging elements. It goes back to that book. But anyway, back to the assignment. We had to go and first collect, I think it was 10 or 12 magazines of our favorite subject. Okay, and so for me, especially back then, it was hot rods, not hard to do. And so then you had to acquire those magazines because you're going to cut them up. And we had a number of compositional principles, and that's an important part of it. And it was really stressed that all these composition principles were merely a suggestion or a guide. They were not carved in stone. They were not to be etched in the memory as the only way of doing it. They were just the first stepping stone in the way that you would arrange elements in a photograph to move the viewer's eye through that photograph to tell a story. And there were things like formal and informal balance, all those, you know, those, yes, the rule of thirds. There was, if I remember correctly, there was 15 principles of composition we had to illustrate. And then you had to present that in a very entertaining way to the teacher and the class. And what I did was simply glued all the photographs to a roll of paper, and then you would spin a roller, and there was two apertures in a box, and the top aperture was a big one that showed the picture, and the bottom one was the title of what compositional principle I was illustrating. And there was probably 12, 14 of us geeky kids in that class, and it left a heck of an impression. Because it was really stressed that composition is how people, after the fact, try to explain things. And that's why I wanted to, you know, what is it about composition? And a number of times I see people make a comment to my photographs on Instagram, which I'm really very grateful for. But the people will say, what great composition. And it would take me instantly back to the high school class. And I don't personally see that as a compliment, because if you are analyzing a photograph by composition, then to me, I've failed. None of those things that you're told that you need to learn and classes you need to take to master it should be apparent in the final photograph, if that makes sense to you. And I think people get really all in a tied up in a knot worrying about composition, that they come up with things like the golden triangle and rule of thirds, things that are, you know, the S curve. If people understood that the S curve, when it comes to composition, is a major marketing tool, then perhaps when you start thinking about composition that way, you might realize that a lot of the things that people talk about for composition is the way to manipulate your mind to buy things. And yes, photographically, you could easily be, you know, say that you are trying to sell something. So there's the first thing that you might want to, you know, perhaps put in the back of the mind if you want to go further into, you know, actual, I don't want to say book study, but, you know, thinking about this. Now there is, and I'm going to talk about the mind's eye because it's really important to understand. And in this process, you might start Googling things like the mind's eye or how does the mind's eye see? And while there's limited information out there. Now, one thing that might come up might strike you as being a curious item is the Vivid Visual Imagery Questionnaire, the VVIQ. Now, the VVIQ, yeah, I've taken it. And I'm not going to say my score because it's irrelevant. But if you go and do the VVIQ, it starts to give you, I think, a window into the power of the mind's eye and the way that you are you. And that's really the important part, is understanding this thing about, you know, what is it about composition? It's really about the way you want to tell a story. Another way to think about it, if you've not done it already, and I've done it for giggles, go to something on the web, like if you are a blog poster, and you can go to WordPress, and you can start writing something, and then a box will come up if you have it checked that says, hey, AI will sit there and write this faster for you. You just blah, 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 and click it. And yeah, it can be really darn accurate, but the first thing you're going to notice is that your voice is gone. And let me tell you, when I do it, smoke comes out of the computer because, you know, there's other things besides the way I speak and write, all that grammar stuff, you know, just kind of go, you know, but that's another story. The whole thing here is really simple. We all tell our story differently. So if we all organize our stories, our visual stories the same way, using, as people want to say, the rules of composition, and there is no rules. If you all do it by the rules of composition, then why don't you just have AI take your photograph? Because it's all going to be homogenous. It's not going to be unique. And oh man, we need unique these days. We need everybody's voice chiming in with their own personal slants and ideas and romance and passion. So how does this help you put that camera in your eye as you go out inspired to go shoot to make the shots? Well, I'm going to give you two things, just two things to think about. And that's plenty, let me tell you. Because in those two, boy, we open up Pandora's box of photographic challenges. Now, I always talk about how I arrange the elements of my photograph. And you might be saying, how are you arranging the elements when you've got this plane zipping by? You can't just make it stop. You can't go out and move things. How are you arranging elements to tell the story? And that's a really great question. First, you should understand that the photographs you see is the ones where the elements that I want to arrange when I start the whole process actually gel in that one picture. The one before it, the one after it, are more likely don't have all those elements arranged the way I want to, which is why you're seeing that one that I post. Does that mean I pray and spray? There are some instances where sure I do. There's some instances where yeah, I arrange the eye, up the ISO. There are, you know, times where I'll take a picture and I will delete it because it doesn't work. It's all based on arranging elements. Now, I've mentioned before, for example, when I'm panning with something that I know or I have an idea where it's going to go. So I'm going to stick with aircraft because that's something that it's kind of, you know, a mental obvious picture. We know the plane's going to go in a certain direction or path. I'm always going to, always, I'm going to take the lens I have that I'm going to use and I'm going to focus on the background. I'm going to focus on the background and I'm going to pan. And I'm going to go slowly and I'm going to look for bright areas, busy areas, areas that are going to blur into a really cool pattern. I'm going to look at all those background elements before the plane even approaches. And if I don't like what I'm doing, I'm going to move till I find that background. Background's that important. It's a major element. It's the stage we set for our star, the subject. So that's the first element. And in that process, when the plane goes and flies in front of the background that I have already predetermined as one I want, I'm going to shoot only when it's in front. I push the trigger, fire that shutter, only when it's in front of the background I desire. And the other backgrounds, I'm going to not shoot then. So in that process, yeah, you could say I'm going to pray and spray because I'm going to not shoot, and then I'm going to shoot a bunch while it's in front of the background, not shoot. But I've already predetermined the background that is the best background for that subject. Now, how does that come about? Well, there's two things. Man, I wish I could find that book. Anyway, the mind's eye, in other words, the way that our visual acuity goes out and looks at things, and we prioritize how we're going to assemble the pieces that the mind is bringing in, and assemble those pieces, and you got to keep in mind that our visual memory and our eyes and the way it's all connected is just a marvel. We take it for granted because as soon as we wake up and open our eyes, there it is until we go to sleep. It's just functioning. It works great. Yes, we might need glasses and those, this, that, and the other, but it's a marvel. It's a marvel. So we have to kind of take what is we take for granted and actually stop for a second and think about how it's working. And we have to not only think about how it's working, but then how can we use that functionality that is a global thing, right? It's not cultural, but it's a global. How we can use that to reach the viewer and to tell our story, and most importantly, grab those heartstrings and get them involved. The two things I want to talk about, which I've talked about before, is light and bright and sharpness, which has been found the number one and number two thing the mind searches for and latches onto in its quest to understand the visual information that's coming in. Now, here's the thing that it's really, really hard to just gel, is the fact that our camera, as I lovingly say, is a cold, heartless bastard. It doesn't work this way. Light and bright for the camera, okay, is a number. And numbers don't work when it comes to romance and passion. I've talked many times how there's no slider for those things. And sharpness. Yes, the camera can autofocus, but as you know, you have to tell the autofocus system which one to use. You have to engage it. And then you have to, for the most part, tell it what the subject is, even if it's just as simple as putting the subject in the viewfinder. I mean, you can't point to the left and say, okay, take the picture of the bird on the right. So the camera, demands on your input. And the more input you give it that is truly you, the more it's going to do what? Deliver what you want. So light and bright. Now, light and bright, if you put numbers to it, right? We're talking about 247 or higher, which you're talking about paper white. In other words, the ink's not going to put down any ink on that paper when you're printing. It's just going to be paper. That kind of bright. Light and bright. So lighter than or brighter than those elements in a photograph will grab the mind's eye. It just goes zoop right to it. It can't help itself. It's just the way we are wired. Now, if you have a subject, and let's just say it's just for discussion's sake, the subject is in the lower right-hand corner, but you have a nice, beautiful, puffy cloud in the top left corner. It's going to be a lot of work for you to take the mind's eye, which is latched onto those clouds, and come down to that lower right-hand corner. That's just a stretch. And the mind's eye loves simplification. Complication, it just says, I'm out of here. And that's why you flip the pages of magazines as quickly as you do. Those things that grab your attention are using these basic elements. You could say compositional principles of selling to make you stop and look at a page. But it's the way the elements are arranged in that photograph that is going to actually sell your story, your emotion, and grab heartstrings. That's what photo editors are really blessed at really telling you. And when you get, and that's why I always encourage you to get into publication. It's because you're going to start learning these things that there just isn't any great class or great book. I've watched them. I've gone out and looked at all of them, hoping. But it's as soon as you start saying rules, okay, and you don't say these are just a stepping point, then you're just becoming an AI compositional robot. And that's not what you want to be. I don't think that's what your photography should be. So light and bright, it's going to grab the viewer's attention. First thing, the eye is going to go out and scan and boom. You want to do a simple test? Take a piece of white paper, no matter how big or small you want it, and put it on your dining room table and try to take your eye away from it. You can't. Your eye's going to go right to that white thing every time. And then, if you know, you could make it a shape, and that goes down the list of how quickly mind grabs and make it a shape. And then if you want to see what happens, put cotton balls on it and watch how all of a sudden your mind doesn't go to it as fast, because the second thing the mind's eye locks onto is sharpness. So we go back to that first example. We have a puffy white cloud in the top left corner, and we got a subject in the lower right corner. If you make that subject in the lower right corner tack sharp and the rest of the frame out of focus, now you're really screwing with somebody's mind, because they're going to go to the cloud, and then the mind's going to go to the little sharp element in the bottom right corner, and then it's going to go, how do they relate? And you're really messing with the way the mind's eye wants to circulate through an image. Now, white and bright is not a bad thing. It's not a good thing. It's a thing you have to think about as you arrange elements. It is something that has to kind of be in your forefront, and then sharpness is the next. And I encourage you to just play with those two elements as you arrange elements in your photograph. And when it comes to sharpness, keep in mind that 99.9% of the photographs that of mine that you see out there, I've shot wide open. I don't close down. So the depth of focus is only as much as that focal length, that f-stop I'm using, which is wide open, and my distance to the subject and distance from the subject to the background permits. Yet, I'm going to be manipulating your eye to see things as being sharper than they are, and in that process, move your eye through the frame. It's no different than the way that I'm hopefully kept your attention during this podcast, and I have arranged the elements in this dialogue to bring you to the point where you have to realize that what it is about composition is it's a really easy handle to say, I don't know. It's not an avenue that you can use to truly bring out your visual story. That's got to come from the way you arrange the elements to tell that story. And elements are everything in that photograph, everything from out of focus to in focus, from light to dark, shades of black and white, and all the color you can put in there, and a whole bunch more. So don't fall into that trap. What is it about composition? You folks have a marvelous week. Go out there and shoot and make every click your story.